Welcome to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast, joined by the inestimable Randy Boone. Randy, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. My son is a flag game this Saturday, which conflicts with the spring game. So
I'm trying right to figure, now. So you're good.
Well, I'm trying to figure out a way that I can injure him so he wouldn't be able to play. And then we have to, but I'll accidentally injure him. I'm not going to do it purposely. I'm not a monster. But yeah, I'm trying to figure out a way so we can skip this nonsense and I don't have to coach him and his knucklehead teammates. But I'm afraid I may be missing the live spring game, but there may not be a spring game based on the weather, but
it doesn't look too good. Our T-ball schedule was Monday, Tuesday this week, and we don't play again until the following Tuesday. So I am primed to watch some spring game if it occurs.
This is the saddest dad podcast that's ever started, of like bemoaning T-ball and flag football schedules.
Yes. But
elite men.
But it is life.
Elite coaches like us have to step up, Randy. You guys know my flag football expertise as one of the elite flag football 10-year-old coaches in Colorado Springs. Randy has stepped up to the plate in Yoakum, where he's among the top 20 T-ball coaches in that region.
Probably so. I'd say it's fair.
There's only 18, but you never know.
Well, we only have five.
Maybe a couple of moms volunteer.
Yeah, we have five teams here. So, but I did volunteer to be the hitting coach. That way I only have to deal with one kid at a time and I don't have to deal with defense. So
the pitcher as hitting coach, that's treachery. I don't like that.
It's don't hit ground balls is my entire do the opposite of what I tried to do when I pitched.
I guess there's not a lot of pitching instruction in T-ball other than the pitcher is probably your most important fielder.
You would think so, but basically it's like a complete NASCAR pileup every time any balls hit anywhere near anybody. So especially now, it says 4 to 5, but I have several 3-year-olds that are within the age group of 4 on our team. So yeah, it's an interesting deal. Being the home team is very, very advantageous to where you don't have to sit out there for the last 20 minutes of the game and try and keep people interested. I love that
parents are getting kids involved early, but 3 to me is a little young. I don't think you can play kids who have a real risk of pooping themselves during a practice or a game.
We had a kid the other day that legitimately walked up to home plate with his hands correctly, stood on the left-hand side, put his bat on his shoulder, just like I tell everybody, stood in the correct spot in the batter's box and everything's ready. I looked at him, was like, aren't you right-handed? And he goes, yes. I turned and looked at his dad in the stands. I'm like, I mean, but he's like, no. He needs to go to the right hand side. I'm like, oh, he looks pretty comfortable over here.
Hey, you might have a switch hitter.
Maybe we should roll with this.
That's awesome. That is great.
Oh man, it's been interesting for sure.
That's really cool. That's funny, man. All right. Well, we do have some things that we're going to talk about. I want to talk about at least. I'm curious to see mine your brain on the spring game. I'm assuming it's going to go off. You know, I guess there's been a weather update recently, and CDC tweeted that he thinks that there's going to be light rain early and the big storms will come in late. So my guess is they're going to start the spring game on time and then probably try to finish it early. So talk to me, man. What are you looking for? What do you want to see, if anything?
I just think, you know, the depth shine, you know, that's kind of the themes that, you know, we're going to have a much higher level of depth everywhere. You know, if we hit a couple of deep balls, it wouldn't hurt my feelings to witness that. But I think their goal is going to be to get in, get out, and keep everybody healthy and put on a good show. Rightfully so. That's kind of what I would do in that situation as well. But in terms of like seeing anything particular, you know, like to see the defensive line, maybe, you know, the old zero sum thing comes true, but I'd like to see the defensive line hold their own in some run situations. But I'd also like to see us run the ball as well. So
yeah,
damned if
good.
You do, damned if you do, damned if you don't type thing. But no, just, you know, athleticism all over the field, make some, you know, see some people, make some plays, stuff like that. But it kind of goes back to what we've hit on before in the past is, you know, there are results and then there's what does it look like? And I think it's a big eye test thing for me is just, hey, do we have people flying around? Does it look like we have athletes? Does it look like we have some physicality? You know, I think the quarterback position is what it is. I think we feel pretty good there. But yeah, just really just excited to see some football again.
I can recall spring games because I've been to a bunch. I've obviously watched a bunch since they've been televised, but you know, there are spring games where you watch and you go, man, we stink. We're not very good. And you know, of course, some guys would have success because it's a zero-sum game. And, you know, the guy puts up some stats throwing the ball or a running back breaks loose. Jeremy Hills sometimes, right? Every year he would dominate the spring scrimmage. He'd be like, Jeremy Hills, breaking out. And then he'd go concentrate on his music. But oh, that was Chris Butcher. My bad. Chris Butcher was like really gifted musically. But I guess you just are looking for, like you said, it's the eye test. I mean, like, you kind of know what good looks like. So I'm less concerned about the matchups. That said, if we run the ball on the first drive, it's like the second team O-line and second team running backs. And Trey Wisner goes 7 carries for 80 yards and a touchdown on the first drive on 7 consecutive inside zones. I'm going to be a little concerned. I might throw something.
Yeah, against the first team D, that would be concerning. You're correct.
Yeah, I would be very happy for Trey, but and you know Arch's just natural ability, just being out there, made the running game work, right? But
yeah, it's his physical presence creates holes.
His Manning like calm just created all those opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so, yeah, so I'm saying this in a very philosophical way, but there will be something individually during the game where I'll get really excited or I'll throw my hat on the ground in disgust. So as aloof as I'm trying to be and detached, I know that I'll get dragged in just because it's football being played and there's a Texas Longhorn on the helmet. I'm going to get fired up.
Oh yeah. Very, very true. That's a given. Let me ask you this. You mentioned him. Everybody's high on Wisner. Everybody that's done an interview has mentioned Wisner.
I think it's Wisner. Being,
or Wisner. Okay.
So I've gotten corrected, I think, by his dad in a live chat. Well, so I want to make sure I get that right.
I apologize because as somebody whose name has been pronounced Booney plenty of times in my life, I apologize for doing that.
Oh, they're not mispronouncing your name. They're just saying that's where you're from.
There you go. Nice.
Sorry.
But I'm interested. Like, everybody's talking about him. I agree. I saw the flashes last year, and if he's made progress and works hard, but do you see a path for him to be a meaningful contributor at running back, or do you think he's a special teams ace this year, waiting his turn?
Both. I think he might. I think he's right now slated to be the third running back, but I think he's definitely going to be a special teams dude. I think he's going to be an integral guy. So the thing that's intriguing to me about him that I've heard is they said he's just extremely hardworking and very serious about football. And they said he came in and people were like, oh yeah, he's talented. You know, he's good pass catcher, especially for a running back. He's, you know, pretty quick. And what the comment that I heard was, wow, like he improves every month. Like he's a better player. Like you can see him improve every time he's doing something. And that's pretty cool.
Do you see him as maybe like a we run a 2-back set, we can, and then all of a sudden he motions out to the slot to take advantage of some mismatches?
100%. He did that in high school.
It's kind of, I mean, he played slot for a while in high school,
the,
right?
Near the end of his high school career,
because he had a really good running back.
Moved him as the feature running back and made him a slot, and he had like a huge performance in the state title game.
Yeah, well, easy guy to root for if he's, you know, the, you know, lunch pail type guy. Yep. But everybody keeps mentioning him, and I just, you know, it'd be cool to see a guy that know, get rewarded for his efforts for sure.
Here's the other thing where he may have a path, and you know, hey, screw it. It's the spring. I can say irresponsible things. What if Baxter doesn't break tackles?
Yeah, no, I mean, you assume that we have a two-headed monster at running back, but you don't know that yet.
Yeah, and I'm pretty confident in Jaden Blue. But what if C.J. Baxter doesn't break tackles? What if he's sort of the same guy as last year? Now, I don't think that's likely.
True.
But he's not – I mean, Sark is not Mr. Anointment. I mean,
no.
I think
yeah,
you could see changes, right? You could see guys phased out or moved up. And, you know, that might be interesting. So, yeah, I don't ever discount any of that. I'm also kind of intrigued. Obviously, we've got all these wide receivers we're kind of excited about. They're all new toys to play with, right? It's guys that have been in the program that really didn't get a lot of exposure. And then there's guys that are new to the program, particularly the two new guys. The third, Silas Bolden, will be here in the fall. But we don't really, like, know how good they are yet. And I don't actually know where they're going to line up. I don't know what position each of them is best at. And it's possible Sark doesn't know yet either. Maybe part of the spring game is to try to figure that out.
I would agree with that. I think the wide receiver core sets up to be a very diverse group that can move around a lot. Where you could go four wide a lot and have a quick passing game a la Colt McCoy. I just don't know that yours is demonstrated proficiency in that quite yet to be anything other than a potential candidate for a offensive weapon, other than something they're going to rely on.
Yeah. Speaking of the Mighty Quinn, third year in the system, third year has sort of been magical for Sark's prior quarterbacks. That's typically where they went from good to very good. Mm-hmm. Or some of them actually, that was their first year as a starter. I think that was Mac Jones. And like he, of course, had that breakout. We did a deep dive on the Inside Texas YouTube channel. If you guys aren't watching or listening to that, and you're a listener to this podcast, I think you're missing out, and you should probably join Inside Texas as well. But that's my two cents. That's my opinion. But we did a deep dive. We actually broke down some tape of Quinn Ewers, and we talked about his huge progress from 2021 to 2000, or sorry, from 2022 to 2023. And then we said he could still level up. And we gave some examples of where he had pretty straightforward touchdowns dialed up by Sark, and he wasn't able to deliver because of some inconsistency in his throwing. And I was curious, as a guy who is a bit of a throwing expert, what do you see? And do you think that's a valid, I wouldn't even say it's a criticism, just a valid acknowledgement that he still has growth, which is great.
Yeah,
what do you see from Quinn as a thrower? I'm just curious and like mining your opinion.
No, I mean, I absolutely agree that there's growth. I mean, I think there's growth for pretty much everybody in a throwing world until they're in their probably mid 20s. So I think even Dr. Andrews, James Andrews, renowned Tommy John expert, has mentioned before that, you know, you're throwing growth plates and all that stuff doesn't really mature until you're in mid 20s. So your mechanics and everything can obviously go with that. But, you know, I think a guy that, you know, graduated high school early, kind of missed a year. I know he's practicing, but he basically missed a year. Live game bullets and everything. And his high school experience at Southlake was probably a lot different than some other people. I didn't watch all their games, but a lot of them seemed like he was pretty comfortable back there. And he's so supremely arm talented that he can get away with some stuff. And that parallels into my world on the baseball side, where if you're super athletic and have the ability to basically overpower some physical limitations or physical rules, you can do it for a while until it catches up with you. But windows get smaller as you get older in the football world, and that half second beat that he seems to every once in a while hold the ball for due to some of his mechanical limitations, I think has sort of showcased itself. I have not seen y'all's video on the breakdown, but I did listen to the podcast, and I would agree that, you know, there are times where if you're watching the game from, you know, no live bullets flying at you from, you know, halfway up in the bleachers, it's, you see the windows develop and close a little bit on him. A lot of times he has the arm talent to make up for it. Those times will decrease more and more as he moves forward in his career, and especially going to the SEC and then into the NFL.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Still supremely arm talented. I'm not taking anything away from that, but there's a lot of guys that came through college that were supremely arm talented that do not have the accolades that he has, that went on to pretty darn good careers because they cleaned up some stuff.
Do you see anything specific mechanically, just as a guy who sort of knows how to throw stuff?
I've never liked his little hop thing.
Yeah, the reset that, hop.
The back foot and the hop thing have always sort of, I don't know, just stood out to me as things that look odd. I've never worked with a quarterback coach or anything of those likes, but as you said, I have thrown things for a good majority of my life. And it's all about transferring energy from the ground up through your body, through your shoulder, and into the throwing mechanism in whatever form that may be, whether it's a tennis serve, a baseball throw, or a football throw. And being grounded is kind of part of that whole thing. I'm not trying to turn anybody into a Jimbo robot where you got to hold the ball right next to your ear.
No.
But most successful quarterbacks are a little higher than him, I would say, in the way they carry the ball, and a little tighter. So, yeah, I mean, there's things, and I'm sure that stuff that Sark's pointed out and that they're working on, but like you said, he has such a supreme arm talent that I'm sure he's been able to get away with a lot of stuff over the course of his career. But once windows shorten and timing becomes of utmost priority, it becomes a more and more of a focus.
Well, I invited you listeners to go check out the deep dive, but you don't need to do a deep dive if you're going to get a home mortgage. There's only one number you need to call, Randy. It's one of the only numbers that I currently know anymore. When I was younger, I had about 35 numbers memorized. Now I know, I think, three.
I'll tell you this. The bright side is now Gabe is always available. But as bad as the Astros have been, he is now literally always available. Like, he will even answer the phone during an Astros game, I promise you.
He is always available, and the anger that he has from the Astros is giving him a little bit of edge to his mortgage game, which you can harness to your advantage. And also, it's made him a little more beaten down, so you could give him extra assignments and air. You could be like, hey, man, I'm ready to use you as my mortgage guy. I know you're really good, but also, could you come over to my house and clean the garage? He'll be like, fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, that number that I do know, one of the few numbers I have memorized, is 832-557-1095. Hey, you've heard me talk about Gabe Winslow before. Really good dude. Very sharp. Over 20 years in the industry. Also owned a title company. Not just a mortgage guy. Look, you can go online. You can Google mortgage rates. You can go to big banks. Dude, they suck. They're quote monkeys. Whether you use Gabe or not, please use a private mortgage guy who at least shops from 70 different options to get you the best possible deal. But my recommendation is to use Gabe. 832-557-1095. And if you got some financial goals that are even larger than just getting a mortgage, which is not insignificant, I know a gentleman that is very aligned with you wherever money touches your life. His name is David McClellan, a multi-national championship swimmer at the University of Texas. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. He is an absolute expert, particularly in retirement. And that's one of the most integral aspects of finance, particularly for folks who have accumulated some real wealth and they have traditional IRAs, they've got 401ks, you've done everything right. And what they didn't tell you was you've got a massive retirement tax bomb. And there are ways to defuse that bomb. And yes, I understand you read an article once in Money Magazine, you think you've got it, talk to David and you might realize you don't got it. There's a lot more nuance to this than you think. So give him a call and find out. 312-933-8823. No pressure, no commitment. David's a really successful, highly paid professional who does great, has a great client list. He's only interested in working with people where he sees a mutual fit. And I'm sure you'll be making the same assessment. So if you think there's a fit, go for it. If not, you talk to a really cool dude who loves UT as much as you do, and you got 30 minutes of free financial advice. That's pretty cool. So that's all I got, Mr. Boone. What else are we going to be looking at in the spring game? Is there anyone else you're interested in seeing?
I'd like to see Makuba, see what he looks like.
Ditto.
He's up there on the list. Our new edge guy, Mr. Moore. See what he looks like. Live bullets flying against some what we would like to consider some elite offensive line talent.
Can I stop you for those two real quick?
Let me throw one more at you.
Please.
I've heard Mr. Benda has had quite a successful spring and maybe a candidate for some gas camp consideration. But guys like that are easy to root for. Good yes. Dude, program dude. You know, you can say the light bulb went off, or maybe he just sort of figured it out or whatever. But yeah, he's a guy that I'm rooting for this year, for sure.
You ever seen Benda interviewed?
Great guy. Very
great smart. Guy. Like, people complain about the younger generation. If you don't go try to hire that guy and you've got a business, just, I don't care what his major is. Look at how he comports himself. Look at how he communicates. He's obviously bright. He's obviously someone that understands what it's like to work hard for a goal. Dude, if you're not falling over yourself to hire that kind of guy, you're nuts.
100%. Absolutely.
I'm talking to you, Randy. Are you hiring?
I don't know that he'd want to deal with what I deal with, but no, yeah, he doesn't. I would take him in a heartbeat. I got to stay in hotels that don't have internet, Paul.
That's true. We tried to do this podcast last night, and Randy's like, hey, it's going to be late. Hope you don't mind. And I was like, no problem. I'll stay up. And then he's like, my hotel doesn't have internet. So don't stay at the Residence Inn in Temple.
Yeah. So, well, I can't never stay there again. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
Yeah, well, tough shit. Hey, speaking of Makuba and Moore, I am really excited to see them. And so here's what I'd heard on Makuba. And I did watch him a little. I pulled up some highlights and I watched portions. I mean, just being a college football fan, I've watched Clemson games and I've seen Makuba on the field, right? But I didn't focus on him. And the take that I sort of gathered about him is that he was more of a finesse guy. And what people have informed me is, no, he's not. Like, he's not 185 or 190 pounds, so he's not hitting like a ton of bricks. But they said, no, he goes up and sticks his head in there and he tackles. So he's not just a sort of, hey, let's put this guy in the back of the defense and have him range around. It's you can walk him up in the line of scrimmage and he'll support the run. He's a complete safety. So I thought that was interesting. So we'll see if that matches to the spring game performance. And then on Trey Moore, I'll be honest, man. I know from my study of this that it's a fact, and I've been saying this for a while, that the FCS All-American or the Group of Five All-Conference Player of the Year, they scale up much more reliably to the big time than the former five-star who didn't quite pan and is looking for a new scenery, right? However, when I watched his tape at UTSA, a lot of his sacks were not pure edge rushes, but more the Roadrunners are blitzing. And he was the guy who was agile and fast enough to run down the quarterback. He didn't necessarily like destroy the offensive tackle with a traditional move. And so I was like, I don't know. I wonder if this is going to translate. I knew he was like not very long. And then like the instant feedback I got from a program insider is like, this dude's a problem. He's super fast. Like his first 5 yards are crazy. And he said, that's why on those videos, he keeps running down the quarterback. It's not a coincidence. So if that's true, Man, I don't know how you feel about this, but you kind of know my theory about flushers and chasers. That's a skill set that we have not had in the program
No,
under
we've been
Sark.
missing it for sure. Definitely.
We have not had that dude on the edge who capitalizes on the flush from the interior or a blitz or whatever and just sprints down the quarterback and slams him to the ground, right?
Well, I think that ability too will play into what you've said and what I agree with as well is as we are currently constructed, and we'll see how we come out of this whole transfer portal thing. But I think you're going to have a whole lot of penetrate and flush out of your interior more
Yeah.
so than, hey, you guys eat up these guys and we're going to create one-on-one matchups for our edge guys and free up lanes for our linebackers. I think it's going to be a lot more of those interior D-line guys being freed to create havoc. And then we fill the lanes of said havoc. So if he can run down some people, yeah, he can go around the tackle or he can suck back inside and chase him down. So that probably plays to his strengths a little bit more.
So I've been saying that, right? That we've got to adjust the defense a little bit to the skills and traits of the
Yes.
interior defensive line.
Absolutely.
They're more finesse guys, they're quickness guys, they're penetration guys, they're movement guys. They're not going to dominate the guard across from them and fling him 3 yards into the backfield, right? TBD, man. And here's why I say that. We're heavy in the portal after anchor defensive tackles right now.
Oh, absolutely.
So maybe that is not for them to start per se, those guys. Maybe it's for us just to have that capability. So maybe Collins and Broughton are getting unleashed, but maybe if Michigan's kind of running on us and being a little physical with us, maybe those anchors go in and then you squelch that, and then suddenly you're asking their super athlete quarterback to throw a forward pass, which he has not yet demonstrated that he can do.
Well, it plays into a guy that we just talked about in Benda, whereas last year he had a couple games where he was a star
Yeah.
because they were trying to pound us and he was like, no, I got this. So yeah, I mean maybe you have, I mean that's the ideal scenario to me is how do you diversify your defense into the manner where if you do struggle with said game plan, if you change the game plan, you're not asking people incapable of executing the game plan to do it. You go, hey, this isn't working. Never mind. This is your guys' game to shine. And then we'll revisit this on Sunday when we watch film.
Well, you said, when opponents just try to pound us, he's not just going to bend over for that.
No, right.
You're not appreciating that at all.
I got it. It wasn't that funny.
Ah, dang it.
You
Yeah, I guess
kind of
the point is.
cut out in the middle of it, and it took me a second to get it.
Oh,
So
damn it.
that's why it
Damn
went.
it. Just trying to elicit a reaction. Here's the thing. I think you might be right. We might be onto something. So our activity in the portal for defensive tackles who are kind of anchor guys could be one of two things. One, it could be, hey, we're not changing this defense. It worked last year. We're getting anchors and we're going to start the anchors. And the changeups might be the guys on the roster, right?
Right.
The other alternative is no, we like Alfred. But he's average as a catch defensive tackle eating a double team. He's good as a penetrator and a movement guy. So let's just have certain games are Alfred games, and certain games are transfer X run plugger game, or certain drives or certain series, right? And hey, if we get up 2 touchdowns, it's an Alfred game because they got to throw and he's pass rushing.
Absolutely.
So maybe it's not all just neatly one thing because I do notice that people notice the pursuit of the defensive tackles in the portal and they're like, oh, they must hate these guys on campus. I'm like, no, I think I think Sark's just trying to have answers for every sort of situation.
I agree 100%.
Football more and more is becoming more and more situational. It's almost, absolutely. God help me, I'm going to say it, it's almost like baseball. If you've got to get a Hold certain on. Out.
Wait, what did you say?
I know. I'm gonna, I cut out. I didn't say it. I didn't say it.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear
it's
it.
Like
okay,
my bed to joke. Yeah. It is more like baseball. In a certain situation, you want to bring up a batter who hits a certain way or hits a certain pitch. Or conversely, in a certain clutch situation, you need to grab that guy off the bullpen who's the lefty and does X, Y, and Z against this specific hitter, right? And you just play that matchup. So, you know, maybe if we're going to truly exploit this depth, which we agree and Sark thinks is going to be a strength of this team. So I don't think the strength of this team is like elite star quality across the board. I think it's a bunch of good players. And we just sort of have waves of them. And then you can alternate who's best based on opponent or situation.
I think the meaning of depth will or has changed and will continue to change moving forward.
It's, you know, depth used, situation.
Depth used to be, I got three dudes stacked up that do the exact same thing that are really good.
Yeah.
Can be really good. And now I think depth is, hey, maybe this week you play 20 snaps instead of 60 and your backup plays 40.
Yeah. Well,
I think it's a bunch of interchangeable parts to be able to adapt to what's happening because offenses are so versatile and all the rule changes and everything allow them to be able to change so quickly that you can't just go out there in a bare front, be like, hey, this is our game plan.
Yeah.
That may be your game plan for three drives until they come out in a completely different look on the fourth drive.
Well, there's the dance with who brung you school, which yep. There's merit to. But Michigan playing for the national championship, the biggest game that they're going to play, and with the unit that they got there on, it wasn't on J.J. McCarthy's arm, right? It was on that defense. In the biggest game that they play all year, with the unit they're most counting on, they go to one of their best players in the secondary, who's a safety, who's a big dude and a hitter, and they go, hey, man, this isn't your game.
Yep.
We're benching you, and we're starting this little guy who can run because we're playing Washington, and this is our best matchup. That takes a lot for coaches to switch up what's been working, right? But the Michigan coaches were smart enough and sophisticated enough to understand, hey, this is what was working against Illinois and Ohio State and UNLV. This won't work against what we just saw on tape of what they did to Texas. Like, we're putting a bunch of dudes in there who can run.
Absolutely.
And that's what they did. And that was the best defense Washington's seen all year. So there's something to that versatility.
No, I 100% agree. It's I hate the word progressive, but it definitely.
Have you been watching MSNBC a lot, for getting Randy?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
But it's a different way of looking at your typical roster makeup instead of trying to stack the same guy on top of the same guy and just progressively, you know, improve that guy to be the guy that just left. You need to be able to match up in an instance where, hey, what if this offense just goes completely ham and I hate to bring up Herman. I mean, they did a bunch of stuff we didn't see on film. Like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah, I remember. They didn't show that.
Yeah, but it's a football game. Like, you can't just say, hey, we didn't see it before. And also, it's week 9. There's not that much shit out there that they could not do that you've never seen before.
Also, like, let's flip the battlefield. What would you do if you were playing your team? Well, I'd do this and this. Well, that's probably what they're going to do. You know, like,
the answer was always quarterback power. So
Absolutely. You got to run Sam Ellinger 27 times.
Yeah. Quarterback power and flood to the throwing arm side of the quarterback.
Exactly.
All right. Anyway, never mind. Let's get off that.
Thanks for bringing up Herman, bringing everything down.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that, man. And like, look at the edges now.
Yep.
They're suited to different types of opponents or even different downs and distance, right? We got our big edges who are big physical dudes, and we got our little sprinters out there.
You had a situation where you can play your big edges inside and your sprinters outside and have literally a four down lineman group that's capable of playing the run.
Yeah.
In a pinch.
Yeah. And you're running like a dime behind them, right? You're correct. Like 14, right.
And if we throw a dime out, I'll be the happiest person on the planet this year.
Hey, Johnny Nansen ran a 3.17 at Arizona.
I'm in.
So if you average seven with Pete Kwiatkowski's nickel, you get a dime, you get six.
This is true.
Yeah. I didn't mean to do math publicly.
Aren't dimes worth 10 though?
That's where it gets complicated. And four defensive backs, we don't call that a quarter. But you could be in quarters.
It could be. It could be quarters. But
that's true.
Yeah.
It could be quarters, but it can't be a quarter.
Correct. Yes.
And when they say they want to pound the ball, they're not referring to the British pound. So football's complicated, man.
That's why it's such a thinking man's game.
It's a thinking man's game, not like baseball, where you could just be like a dumb animal and roll out there and just pitch a ball.
The dumber you are in baseball, the better it is.
that's kind of established.
There's a reason why hit ball was invented.
If you're cursed with intelligence like Randy, it's not helping you out there. All it's doing is make you like have like existential crisis on the mound. Like, should I do this? Am I playing well?
There's far fewer Greg Maddoxes in the world than there are John Rockers.
That's true on many levels. That's true.
From this through the catcher's glove.
Oh, that's so great. Oh man. John Rocker makes me laugh just reflecting on that guy.
I don't know why it's a perfect representation of what I was trying to say, but I'm not sure why that guy's name popped in my head.
Why not? I know other than like he's your hero, you've got all those posters in your room.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely.
You'd touch his playing card before you.
Yep, it was in my jersey pocket.
Or save. You'd be like, all right, get up, Boone. You'd be like, where's my rocker card? Where's my rocker card? Adrian, Alanis, where's my rocker card? It's like, I hit it, Randy. He's a crutch. Yeah. You don't need it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're just counting on you, Randy.
Go channel your inner Keith Folk.
That's even better. That's a good go there. That's go a good pull.
Go out there and throw some grounders.
That's a good pull.
Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas, even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado. You need to go to Central Texas anyway, and the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura, and it's 512-784-0505.